Welcome back to another episode of Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler. On this podcast, we explore all things related to thriving and flourishing in life. There are three fundamental truths that inform not just my podcast, but my coaching as well. And they are, number one, the future can be changed. You are not stuck and you are not trapped by your predictable future. Wherever you are right now, it's just your present state. It does not determine where you can go in life. Fundamental truth number two, you can change your future. This might be the best news of all. You don't need to be rescued by someone else. You can do that for yourself. In other words, you can be your own hero. And fundamental truth number three, you do not have to wait. Too many people think that they have to have the perfect plan or all the knowledge or all the skills before they can get started. Nothing is further from the truth. I've coached a lot of people in my career, and trust me when I say that you can learn whatever it is that you need to learn along the way. The key is to start. If you've listened to the podcast before, you'll probably know that we find stories and experts who shed light on these different areas so that we can all flourish and thrive. Let's dive in to today's episode. Today's guest is affectionately known as the dopamine dealer of LinkedIn. He founded Standout Authority in 2014 so that he could work with entrepreneurs, business owners, and professionals to help them humanize their professional or company brand on LinkedIn. And he does that by helping people understand that this is about humans connecting with other humans. Now, his story has some twists and turns, and at one point, while he was incredibly successful, his office had become, in his words, his coffin. He made some massive changes, and he's here to share his story. His name is Joshua B. Lee, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. All right. Joshua, thank you so much for joining me here on the podcast.
Of course, Bobby. I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Me too. Now, of course, you have a very interesting title, but why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, no worries, Bobby. You know, it's interesting. I've been deemed the dopamine dealer of LinkedIn. My good friends of mine that run another podcast, it was actually on a podcast where I was explaining a little bit about what I do and how I do it. And the title of the podcast came out and people were like, oh, that's you, Josh, in a nutshell. And it kind of came in with the dopamine dealer of LinkedIn. And that's kind of where I came from. But I mean, you know, I have a massive background and go through. So Bobby, you just tell me where you want me to start, how you want me to kind of tell everyone about what I do and why I have that title.
Yeah, I would say go ahead and kind of explain a little bit more about what you do, because they're probably interested in that. And yeah, let's start there.
Yeah, no worries. Well, you know, again, my name is Joshua B. Lee for everyone listening. I'm really excited, Bobby, to be able to have this conversation today. You know, these days I am the CEO and founder of Standout Authority. And what we do is we are the human algorithm behind some of the thought leaders, top CEOs, and just influencers in this world that are first and foremost leading with their heart, right? Adding value to this world, not trying to monetize it. And we help them educate, inspire, and draw in their audience rather than to sell them to the vehicle of LinkedIn. And I really see that as a much more powerful way to be able to really connect and build advocates. And, you know, we've been blessed to be able to, you know, honestly, Bobby, have some of the men and women I used to be able to read their books on how to be able to start my own companies 20 years ago are now my clients. So it's really awesome to be able to do what we do now. And overall, LinkedIn, yes, is that vehicle we use. But, you know, as we'll probably talk about today, Bobby, I mean, the things that I do, honestly, they're just the things that my mom taught me how to be able to treat other human beings. We're just doing it online.
Yeah. It's amazing how all of it comes back to, you know, that piece of it.
Yeah.
We're trying to build connections, not hornswoggle someone.
That's what we're trying to remind people to do. I hate to say it. I mean, because of some of my past, I think I was one of those people, right? I was in that world. I did that. And I had a lot of learning to do to be able to get me to where I am today.
Yeah. So let's start with your story, because you found yourself kind of at a crossroads at one point. Do you want to kind of dive into that and share that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. So it's crazy. 20 years ago, you know, I started one of my first companies in the online advertising business. And, you know, Bobby, it was 2003. So almost 20 years ago. We're not there yet.
Close.
Really close. And, you know, as I was kind of going through, this is a world that you know, we kind of had to get invited to. And back then it was the Wild Wild West. I mean, no one really understood. I mean, everything was just, you know, putting ads up and monetizing. And I happened to kind of, at that time, I even knew how to build relationships well. And one of my first clients happened to be a company that a lot of people forgot about these days, which is MySpace.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's always funny when I say that, my wife's like, that shows your age when you talk about your client was MySpace. And I'm like, you know, it's okay.
Yeah. Hey, they were big though at the time.
They were. And, you know, it was amazing. It was a blessing and a curse at the time, Bobby, because, you know, having them as a client, you know, we actually built some of the first social media ads that most of what you see today is based on. I helped them design those. And, you know, we would monetize their traffic. We did arbitrage, which was we buy low, sell high. We're buying their traffic for pennies on the dollar. And then we were turning around and selling to Overture, which became Yahoo at the time.
Oh,
so
okay.
It was interesting. We'd sell and you'd have like keywords like mesothelioma, which would pay out like $200 to $300 every time you would click on it. And we were buying those click for like a 10th of a penny. So you can see it was truly like printing money back then. It was insane.
Yeah. But
that's good and bad, right? Like as a young 20-year-old being able to go in this and a boy at the time, you know, we make a lot of mistakes. And, you know, I really grew and between then, I learned how to be able to monetize so many different things. I mean, everything you could think of, I was able to monetize online from every acronym, CPC, CPA, CPL, CPM, all these things. And I built multiple different companies doing that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of led me to a path that where I was taught, right, you know, build the company as large as possible, make money, mm-hmm. be able to go in these things. Don't show anyone that you've ever had any issues. You know, it's really like, you know, you can't show any, you know, any breaks in your armor. You have to be this rock and carrying the world on your shoulders and going through that. And, you know, outside looking in, Bobby, you know, at a certain point, I was running 10 different companies that were running from 6, 7, and 8 figures and had the wife, 2 kids, the house. I didn't worry about money, but there's a big issue, really. I mean, because when I look back on it, I mean, I was 45 pounds overweight. I had never been overweight in my life. I played sports growing up. You know, my relationships had become monetary and, you know, I had no vision about where I was going. I just knew where I was at. And everything was this whole work-life balance that we were taught to be able to live, you know, working just as hard as I was trying to play in the afterwards. And it led me to a path, Bobby. And I mean, where we're talking about that crossroads was when my son was born, I decided to not be one of those dads that wasn't. So I moved my office, where I work, to my home office. And I always wanted to be that dad who, whatever I said in front of my kids, I could be able to say it. And if I couldn't say it in front of my kids, no matter how young they were, I probably shouldn't say it at all.
Yeah.
And I always had my office doors open. One day, I remember so clearly that those office doors closed. And, you know, that office became not only a sanctuary for me, but a coffin that I would stare at the wall every single day, contemplating if my family was going to be better off with the money that I would leave them than with me in their life. And that was a big crossroads for me because I was blessed to be able to have a good friend of mine by the name of Jesse Elder that they kind of gave me my permission back for myself to not only take back my own life, but to give the mother of my children hers as well, because we just had grown apart. We had gotten together really young and that's kind of where it went. And, you know, I mean, as I started trying to be able to transition, we already kind of going through things because I had already wanted to shift who I was in my life and not just monetize the world I was around it, but add value to it. And that gap between my former and myself at that time, it started growing. And that's where these dilemmas started happening because I grew up with parents that never divorced. Right.
And
so
I
didn't know how to deal with those situations. And so in the long run, after talking to my lawyers, and they were telling me, Josh, this is going to take about 3 years to be able to go through. I said, no, I can't put my kids through that. I can't put anyone. I don't want to go through this.
No.
And so I basically closed 10 of my companies, liquidated everything. And at 36, I gave everything to my former and moved back in with my parents with a little under $1,000 in my name to be able to save time, that I was able to finish up the divorce in about 6 months and be able to reset my life and be able to, you know, start forward to where I am today.
Yeah. So moving back in with your parents, that cannot be easy.
No, it's definitely not one of those things, especially when I hadn't worried about money for so long. And I mean, of course, I had that usual thing, you know, with my parents, right? Like, I wanted to impress my father, you know. I remember times, you know, that when I was doing really well, it was the most I'd ever seen my dad proud of me, right? These were those things that we kind of go back in, and like, this is, you know, going through therapy these days and all of that. So these are those things that we find out about, but it's so amazing to be able to kind of look back in and have better relationships now, not only with myself, with my parents, with my former, all those things. And yeah, at 36, I was like, oh, okay, this is great. I've released. I'm starting over. Like, you had met me back then, Bobby. I mean, I was very spiritual at the time because I was trying to kind of transcend and do a lot of my research. I had my man bun, I had my mala beads. That was everything, right?
Yeah.
But I was still in a slight depression. And even though I didn't realize I was in it, and I was trying to fool everyone because my perception of everyone else's perception of me was driving me crazy. And this is what drives most people crazy these days.
Tell me more about that, because I think that's really fascinating.
So most of us in this world, we go through and we always have this perception of everyone else's perception, but that's their perception. If they don't voice it to us, we have no clue what it is. So we can make up a million stories in our heads. And this is what drives most people in this world crazy, because they're always trying to worry about whatever someone else's perception is without ever asking them.
Yeah.
And at that point in time, my perception was, well, I'm still that Joshua B. Lee, the guy that everyone went to be able to help them solve their problems. And I was, you know, putting myself up on this pedestal because that's where I thought everyone saw me. But I wasn't. And I was trying to live this like release in this whole life. And it was just tearing me apart. And until I finally, and I remember I first went to, I texted about a group of like six of my guy friends. And I said, hey, I'm hurting. I'm going to be honest. Like, I don't know. I'm trying not to. Wow. I haven't told this story like in this way in a while. So I'm like trying not to get too emotional here, but like, and they're like, and I won't go through the entire text, but just let them know. And they're like, yeah, we know. We've been waiting for you. We got you.
So they knew all along.
Yeah. They knew. They weren't fooled. They were my friends. Mm-hmm. They knew exactly what was going on. They allowed me to be able to, you know, they knew that I needed time to be able to come to the realization. And then once I did, it kind of helped me come out of it. And then I remember making that first video to Facebook going, hey, guess what? I don't have the things that I had before. And that's okay.
Yeah.
This is who I am. Love me or hate me, because that's what people do in this world. I mean, in any degree, to make a decision, we are human beings. We make decisions based on some degree of love or hate. If people are indifferent towards you, you're not only wasting their time, you're wasting your own. So you have to be able to understand that.
Yeah. That's a powerful place to get to, you know, and letting go of like worrying about what's their perception, because we don't even have any control over it. You know? So when your buddies responded that way, and you could be vulnerable, kind of just, you know, what is it from Wizard of Oz? Don't look behind the curtain.
When
you're like, pull the curtain back. How did that feel?
It was like a huge weight was lifted off my chest, off my back. I mean, as a guy growing up in this world, as an entrepreneur, as all these other things, you know, I was carrying the entire world on my back. I mean, this is some of the reasons why we had issues in my previous marriage too, because I always thought I was trying to protect my family from anything that was going on, you know, and I held that weight all the time. And honestly, causes a lot of issues, you know, if you don't allow, if that's going to be your partner, you got to be able to share these things. Right. And those are those things that you have to be able to understand. They're your partner for life. And so that for me, that was a huge weight off my chest, off my back, you know, like Atlas carrying pushing the rock up the hill, right? Like, it wasn't that weight anymore. So it was, that was some of my weight, right? Like, a lot of my other weight came, you know, I've been married now again for a little over 3 years. And remember when I met my wife too, these days, she's the one thing, just like my friend said, she said the same thing when I was kind of rebuilding my career. She goes, I got you. I never had another partner, you know, female in my life tell me that.
Yeah.
And that was empowering.
And it's the way, like, it's, I think, what we all want.
Yeah.
You know? So is that experience what led you to write your book?
it was. I mean, because, you know, I'd started writing the book prior to my divorce. And because I was already kind of going through this shift and transformational change prior to that. And this is where some of my dilemmas were kind of going, because I had incongruencies with the life I'd already built compared to the life that I was trying to build. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of those issues were when I was trying to better myself, I wasn't taking my partner with me at the same time. And so when that happens, two people start, this gap starts growing. Right. And the gap begins to be grow too much. And, you know, I mean, my book, Balance is Bullshit, I mean, was done because I saw this whole thing, this whole work-life balance is so heavy for people. And I started writing it. And really, it was about, I had to be able to share. Like, it wasn't for anyone else other than me. Now, I did have to pause because in my divorce, it was tried to be placed into the divorce. And I was like, nope, we're going to stop this. It's not complete. No. And so I kind of rewrote it again, which is super fun to try and do.
Yeah. I can't even imagine.
But it was good for me. It allowed me to go through, and the things that I was able to share in there, Bobby, were the things that I was too scared to be able to show. Like, be able to, like, one time the best man for my first wedding stolen over $1 million from me at one point in time. Right.
Oh, there. My God.
I remember another time I had a make or break in my company right before 2008, which is super fun. We all remember 2008. Geez. And I made it, I was at the Playboy Club at the Palms in Las Vegas. And I was sitting there and doing the dumb guy thing. And we were playing cards with another buddy of mine. And he was like, I had just sold my company for X amount of money. And he's like, I'll sell you the source code. And I'm like, oh yeah. You know, I'm like, cool. That's amazing. I'm going to bet on that. It was a $1.3 million bet that it was an investment. And that ended up costing my company almost $10 million over the next year because I didn't do my due diligence. And did not check and make sure all this worked and all these other things. And I mean, like, all these type of things, like talking about my relationship, my past relationship, you know, how I was going through myself. These were all things that I put in the book that I was too scared to share with anyone else because I was told not to.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you did share it in the book, what kind of response did you get?
You know, Bobby, it was everyone that's read the book, you know, appreciated it. They loved it. They really were like, wow, I wish someone had said something this earlier. I did try and launch the book when I was going through that mini depression.
Yeah.
So I probably wasn't the right mindset. Even my friends told me that. And, you know, overall, I've given away so many copies of it. The book's done well, but like, I think I've given away because, like, to me, I carry it around with me everywhere. And whenever I run and talk to someone that I feel needs it, just take one out of my bag and I hand it to them.
Yeah. I've because heard to of me, other that's people more doing important. That. Yeah. It's like helping someone when they need it.
Yeah.
I love that.
So everywhere I go, everywhere I travel, anytime I'm anywhere, even in my car, I always have a couple extra copies just in case that someone's going through and I was like, hey, maybe you need this. Because again, it helped me just to release it and just to be able to hear that you're not alone. Yeah. As entrepreneurs, as people, as human beings, we feel so alone in this world. And I mean, I think, you know, COVID has really brought us all together a lot more just because of the fact that we have a commonality. And that's what we look for as human beings. We all have something that we have in common across the globe now, no matter what religion, what language, where you are in the world, we all have this common thing that we've all went through. And I think it's really brought humanity a lot closer. And I'm really excited about that aspect of it.
Yeah. You know, I hadn't really thought of it that way, but it is that common experience, a shared experience. We can all connect to it.
Yeah.
In the book, I think you talked about the difference between integrating and balancing.
I did. Yeah. I think there's a huge difference.
Yeah. Explain the difference, if you wouldn't mind.
Balancing is, I mean, think about it, right, Bobby? If you and I were sitting here and you're sitting there in a chair talking to me, integrated into the chair, I mean, into the ground, you're good. But if I'm sitting here having to have this entire podcast conversation on one leg, who do you think is going to last longer?
Unless you're really good on one leg. You
know. But I mean, I want people to think about that. Balance is not something that you're constantly trying to go through and balance. It's unachievable.
Yeah.
I mean, it truly is. There is no true balance. Like, there's only growth and imbalance, right? Just think when people are working out, you have to stretch your muscles out for them to grow stronger. And so these are those things. And we've been told this tale, this whole work-life balance. Why does that? It's so heavy. It's a heavy word. And as I spoke and went around the country talking about the book and things like that, it was so amazing to be able to kind of see, especially I found more than ever that I realized, like, I connected a lot with other women in this space, and especially working women, because again, there's so many different things that are put on women in this world and this society, having to balance, you know, being a mom sometimes and having a career and all these other aspects. And it's so inconsistent. And I mean, like, to me, what are the things that make us us that give us the power? How do we integrate those into our lives? So like, I look for the four core pillars in my life that I wanted to be able to achieve each and every day that I could then give back in the world. Because if we fill from an empty cup, we have nothing left. So we have to fill our cup first.
Yeah. So what are your four pillars?
So mine is health, family, communication, and then life. I mean, being able to really go through. So it's, and when I say life, it's more spiritual connection, right? Not so much religion, but meditation, being able to connect with myself and things of that nature. Because I truly think these are, and people go, why would you call that life? Well, that's the essence of life, being able to connect with something greater than yourself. That's not just my life, but it's everyone's life. It's the entire source around us. So that's kind of where I look at it.
Yeah. And one final question on that too, with the integration, because I like that, because I think balancing is a myth, right? We think it's just about, am I allocating my time? You know, and it's like, it's not just about that, right? It's just not. Can you give an example of integration, how it looks in like in your life?
Yeah. I mean, my integration is every single day. I mean, how I wake up in the morning, right? I mean, like some of the biggest things is, you know, if I had to ask you, Bobby, what's the first thing that in this world do you think most people do when they wake up?
Probably, unfortunately, check their phones.
Yep. Reach for that phone. That's the first thing to do. You know what you're doing? You're setting precedents that the outside world is more important than you. You just set the precedents for the rest of the day. The world did not stop spinning. Your company did not burn down. Your family and friends are okay. Because guess what? Someone would have called you if something was really going on. You would not get a text or find it on social media. And so you didn't. You got other things you need to be able to check on. That's how you're finding out something's going on. But you know, I'm like, seriously, the most important things in your life, someone will actually call you. You will be notified some way. It will not just show up when you wake up and like, oh, hey, let me look on social media.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the whole piece we have to be able to understand. So first and foremost, when I wake up, it's like, how do I start my day? You know, I want to work out. I want to meditate. I want to journal. I want to spend, I make time with my kids. Like I do my best. And again, I notice what I say. I do my best.
Yeah. Because
I am not infallible.
No one is.
No one is. We are all human. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the one thing I understand. I do my best to not touch my phone or look at the TV or anything for the first 2 hours of my day.
Yeah.
So I'm being able to put that into my life. You know, I want to make, I don't care if it's doing one push-up, right? One's better than zero.
That's right.
So, I mean, I want people to think about these things as you kind of go in. I spend time with my kids. I spend time with my wife. I want to be able to have that because I spend so much rest of my day being able to get back. I want to go in. So these are those different aspects on how I make sure that integrating those different pieces that are important for me, first and foremost, into my life, those first 2 hours, even if it's only an hour, even if it's 30 minutes, you're starting off, you're filling your cup up first and integrating that into yourself that make you you and give you the power. But then you can give back to the rest of the world and be able to continue to go on.
Yeah. Because man, when you start the day by looking at social media or your emails or whatever, your to-do list.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like starting in a hole.
Yeah.
You know, then the dirt's already been thrown down on you.
Exactly.
it's not positive at all. So I love that. Okay. So shifting a little bit, I want to talk about LinkedIn. What is the human algorithm?
Yeah, no worries. Well, I mean, it all flows back in the same thing. You know, these are the pieces that I learned by going through writing my book, being able to connect with more people, being an only child, right? Like these are those pieces that I really, really learned on. I never paid attention to when I reset my life, I was going to be a life coach.
Yeah.
I realized I'm probably not the best life coach. I was just sharing what was going on with what was with me. And it takes a lot to be a life coach. I mean, like I'm one of my superpowers is I can see people like more so than they've and allow them to be seen. Most people never feel seen. And I'm really good at being able to sit down with someone and making someone feel seen, but that takes a lot of energy and it really, you know, it takes a lot of energy to be able to do that for other people. And so like, it just wasn't my aspect. So I was like, man, how do I take what I used to do? Because all those companies I've controlled over $500 million in advertising. I've monetized over 35 trillion online impressions in my career. And all that time I realized there's a huge difference between actually traffic and actually true engagement. And that's where that human algorithm kind of comes in. Right. Everyone's like, oh, I want traffic. What's traffic do for you?
Right.
Nothing. If no one looks, that's just people looking at your stuff. That's great. But if they don't take action, there's no way. Well, how do we create action? Well, we've got to be able to look at how people flow. And we've all been conditioned, our condition of being online right now. Bobby, have you ever seen the movie? Oh my God. I just lost it all of a sudden. It was on Netflix. A Social Dilemma.
No, but I've heard about it.
So it's one of those movies that like freaked my mom out, you know, on both my parents going through this whole piece. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe these companies are doing this to us. But it's true. For the last 20 years, they've been conditioning us to like, comment, share, post, like, comment, share, post, right? We're in this pattern of just going through. Well, that's the condition we are in right now. With us and a lot of people in the sales and marketing understand, you understand over the time with all these different trainings, you have to create stop gaps in people's pattern to have them hear you. Well, the human algorithm online is very simple. And it's just the same things that, you know, like I said earlier, my mom taught me how to be able to treat other human beings. We're just doing it online. Well, in a world, especially post or current COVID, whatever we're going in right now, we took a lot of things for granted, right, Bobby? I mean, I know I took for granted these little things in life, like not wearing a mask all the time, being able to take my daughter, you know, I mean, my wife out to dinner. And then also for my kids, for my son and daughter, like I took for granted them actually going to school, not just to the other room.
Yeah.
Like I love my children, but I'm not a teacher and I really enjoy them going actually to a school.
As they probably do too. Think of the social interaction they missed.
But these are those things we took for granted. So that's the same thing online. We take for granted people looking at our profile, people liking our posts, right? Mm-hmm. Posting our own content, sometimes we take for granted because we're just told that's what we're supposed to do. Well, how do we actually appreciate these things on LinkedIn? LinkedIn allows you to be able to see who's seeing your profile. And, you know, there's other aspects of it too. So like if you looked at my profile, Bobby, I want to reach out and say, hey, Bobby, I saw you check out my profile. I just want to reach out and say, thank you. Too often we don't appreciate that. I'd love to be able to connect with you and find out what pushed you to check me out. Because what I'm doing is I'm thanking you for something you've taken for granted. I'm thanking you for looking at my profile, or let's say you've liked my post. And I don't care what platform it is, right?
Yeah.
When's the last time on Facebook you liked someone's post and they reached out and said, hey, Bobby, I just want to say thank you for liking my post. I really appreciate it. You know, getting that personal message. Appreciation for something that someone's never been appreciated for creates stop gaps in their pattern.
Yeah.
And that's where that human condition of being online is, right? The human condition is that like, comment, share, post. Well, the human algorithm is just understanding that people are human beings. And the reason why I've been deemed that dopamine dealer of LinkedIn is because I understood that we all look for those little dopamine hits. Like the reason why everyone in this world posts online, I don't care who you are, where you are, what you believe in, whatever it is, we've all been conditioned. When we post online, the first thing people go, well, I post to be able to get, you know, clients, or I post to be able to get branding, or I post to whatever, awareness. We all post to be able to get those likes and comments because we all get dopamine hits as soon as we get it.
Yeah.
Right? We post and we go, is someone going to like it? Someone going to like my post?
Yes! Keep checking back. Like, oh my God, thank God.
At least I got one like, right? This is what
we're looking at. At least the bar's low, but I got one like. I'm not totally ignored. But what's the flip side of that when we don't?
And you don't, but so why don't you become a dopamine dealer, right? Like if you want to be able to attract your own audience and be able to go through, Bobby, why don't you become that dopamine dealer? Find the people, because LinkedIn has this built in. The reason why I love LinkedIn is because they have a CRM system called, and it's Monday, right? I keep on going through. They have their built in CRM system, and what you can actually, it's called Sales Navigator. And really being able to go on there, you can actually see, one, identify your ideal audience. Now, here's the whole thing about it. Most people on LinkedIn, they use that as a marketer or a salesperson. They go, I'm going to identify, you know, Bobby, she's a woman, she does a podcast, and be like, hey, Bobby, I see you got a podcast. And then they connect and they pitch you. And
what
they're doing is they're hoping to be able to go through and be able to pitch 1,000 people and hope that at that one sale, right, that one opportunity. And in essence, all they did was piss off 999 people.
That's what they did. Yeah.
That's what happens. They don't pay attention to that. But what if you could actually make 999 advocates, right? An advocate is so much more powerful than just one client. And so the way that we use it on is I can see the people that I identify first who post online the last 30 days. I can reach out and say, oh, Bobby, I saw your recent post. Wow, I just want to reach out and say thank you. Again, we're starting with that level of appreciation. As human beings, the human algorithm, we always appreciate appreciation, right?
Yeah.
This is just a piece that we've innate in our body. We want to be able to understand that. We want that appreciation because we lack it. In this world, most of us lack appreciation for these things. Mm-hmm. You want to get someone's attention. So those are the different ways that we kind of tone and really go into that. Is I start in this world with appreciation.
Yeah.
Someone liked your profile. Someone liked your post. Or someone posts a great content. Reach out and say thank you first. and ask them, start a conversation. But Bobby, in this world, conversations can lead to relationships and relationships in turn to opportunities.
Yeah. But we think we have to go right to the pitch. And that's what so many people do.
They do. And I mean, I can't say that I didn't, you know, I didn't learn, but I had to be able to go through all that time before to be able to get to where I am now and realize, how about if I just treat someone like another human being, not like another opportunity on the other side, because we don't see them doesn't mean they're not human.
That's right. That's right. You know what I'm thinking about there is because I post on LinkedIn and I do want to connect with people, but I also want to provide value because I've learned a lot over the years. And it's like, yeah. I've coached a lot of people and it's like, hey, I want to provide value. A couple of weeks ago, I woke up and I was awake for a couple hours because I did not get right on it. But when I got to my desk, it was a young woman from another continent. Mm-hmm. And she said, I just wanted to thank you. She goes, what you posted was exactly what I needed to hear today. I was like on cloud nine.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that's perfect. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about there, right?
Yeah. Because it doesn't matter who you are in this world. Like if you could be the Fortune 500 CEO, now maybe they're not post doing their own posting, but still the person doing it, when they get appreciation for the post, they took effort. It took energy, right? We're all human. To be able to get that appreciation of that effort that was taken, it creates a stopgap and it makes people stop and be able to hear you now.
Yeah.
Right? If someone hears you, now you can actually start a conversation with. And so that's really what we're trying to be able to do. And I mean, when we get those dopamine hits, it puts us in a flow state. Right.
Yeah.
And that's where you want people to be able to be, right? I want to be in a flow state of mind because people go, you think, oh, flow state, you're like you're working at a higher level. Actually, no, you calm your brain down a little bit. You're not trying to overprocess everything and you're just allowing what's happening and being in the moment. And so this is what we want people to be able to be in. I mean, as we kind of go through, Bobby, we'll start off. As you said, I didn't say, hey, thank you for looking at my profile. I said, hey, thank you for looking at my profile. Love to find out what pushed you to check me out. Thank you for engaging in my post. I'd love to find out what pushed you to engage in my post. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I'm always trying to start that conversation because most people connect on LinkedIn and they never have another conversation because what they're doing is they're trying to collect them all. My kids always say, it's like Pokemon, right? You got to collect them all, not on LinkedIn. We're not playing that game, right? There's a better way to be able to do it.
Yeah. And I noticed there that you said, what pushed you to look at the profile or what pushed you to engage? Is there some reason for the way that you're phrasing that? Is that significant?
You know, I mean, I believe that everyone, there's always something that's compelling them to be able to do something. Mm. There's always a piece, right? There's always something that is attached to it, right? We are emotional beings. We all decisions emotionally. So there's always something behind that. If you allow someone to open the door, a lot of times they'll walk through it and they'll actually start a real conversation. You get a yes or no answer. Well, that stops the conversation. That's what we're trying to be able to do is to be able to continue the conversation. So that's why I ask them what pushed them, because usually that ties to something emotional trigger that they notice within the post or with why they looked you up or whatever it might be. Because it's just, I mean, there's certain things, right? If I reach out, I've learned over the years, probably like when we're reaching out as a man or a woman, right? As a man, if I'm reaching out to another woman, I'm going to say hi to you, Bobby. Say hi, Bobby. Or if it's, let's say John, I'm going to say, hey, John, because most women don't like a man to hey it.
Okay.
Like, hey, Bobby, what's up? You know, like the whole thing like that. So there's different levels that we've seen being able to watch how humans interact in through these conversations. It's amazing. And like, I'll give you an example.
Okay.
On how this really kind of breaks down. So one of my amazing clients, someone that, again, I used to read his books on to be able to start my own companies. His name is Dan Sullivan. He's been, you know, one of the top coaches for the last 30 years, runs a company called Strategic Coach. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dan, one time someone liked his post. And we, of course, reached out on his behalf and told the person like, hey, you know, I just want to reach out and say thank you for liking my post. And he was in the process of launching his new book with, renewed book, Who Not How. And if you haven't checked out Who Not How by Dan Sullivan, it's amazing. And the response from the person is something that I'll never forget. He was like, Dan, thank you so much. You'll never know what this means to me. Today, I had planned on it being my last.
Wow.
But by you showing me to appreciate the things I took for granted, it gave me new hope for this world. Thank you.
Huh.
Like,
wow.
This is the thing that we don't realize. Everything that we do is a ripple. And mm-hmm. ripples can turn into tidal waves. And so you never know what a thank you or a little bit of appreciation this world will do for someone and how it will change their life. That's why I know and what I love what I do, because we work with clients, they have lots of products, they have services, you know, on the higher end stuff, but I see these impacts, these ripples in people's lives every single time by these thought leaders, by these entrepreneurs that are going through and appreciating someone, because they're the ones that made all of us to be. The reason why we're on this podcast is because people listen. Mm-hmm. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Bobby, right? Because that has allowed me to be here today. You know, so these are those pieces that we have to remember to be able to do. And sometimes we lose sight of that. So kind of why we do these things.
Yeah. You know, that example you gave too, it made me think about so many times what people are really longing for is just to be seen, to be noticed, you know?
Well, I'll tell you a little bit, Bobby, I think it's shifted a little bit. So we're in a world right now, the social audio influencer, right? I think it's even changed now because we're seeing such a high shift, especially for you for a podcaster and things of that nature. It's not so much that people want to be seen anymore. They want to be heard.
They want to be heard.
Because think of how powerful a voice is.
Yeah.
If you read a text message or see an image, yes, it causes, but when you hear someone's voice, you can hear their tonality, right? You can be able to hear the inflection of their voice. You can be able to really understand the impact of what they're trying to be able to say. And I think that's the different shift that we're seeing in the world right now. Is people want to be heard. They've been dying to be heard. And now they really have the opportunity with social audio. LinkedIn launched their social audio platform, which I was blessed enough to be one of the 200 beta testers for that. We've got Clubhouse, we got Twitter Spaces, all these things. And you're seeing these massive people running to this because I think that's where we're really seeing this shift. And it ties in exactly with what you're talking about.
Yeah. Now the social audio, or because you're doing an event in a couple of days, you know, at the time that we're recording this, and it's a LinkedIn audio, right?
Yeah.
What is that? Am I just behind the A-ball? Like, I have no idea what's going on here.
No, it's okay. It's still in beta. So my wife and I, my amazing wife, Rachel Beely, you know, and yes, we did not brand that. It's just her last name was Bronstein and she moved to the middle name and it just happened.
Oh, that's perfect.
She's the branding lady boss. And all of a sudden we're like, Joshua Beely and Rachel Beely. Like people are like, oh, it's the Beelys. I'm like, look at that.
No.
Worked out well. But, you know, we both got access working with LinkedIn as much as we do through their creator program to LinkedIn it's been about 6 weeks now. Now, again, depending on this podcast, but, you know, we got access as one of the 200 top creators coming in to be able to have access. Very similar to, like, if you use Clubhouse or Twitter Spaces or any of those. So very similar to that. A little bit different, though. It's LinkedIn's take on it. They just launched it. So only now 500 of us have access to create and host rooms.
Wow.
But all 800 million people on the platform have access to be able to listen in and be able to participate. So it's really cool to be able to be one of these early on onset audio beta creators for LinkedIn and be able to work with them on what's working, what's not. Because I'll be honest, there's still a little bugs on there.
Of course.
They're just launching. But, you know, it's different. It's not like Clubhouse. We have live audio rooms where you can kind of jump in. LinkedIn audio is more like event-based, right? Where people can kind of come in and be able to really... You schedule out events in advance, you can build your thing, and then you have your audience be able to, again, when's the last time you got to be able to hear and be able to connect and actually engage with your audience on LinkedIn? And so this is that whole new thing they're starting to be able to do, because honestly, the average person spends, I think right now, about 7.5 minutes on LinkedIn. And so being able to add audio rooms and being able to go in this, they're expanding the time that people are spending on there. LinkedIn's changing. It's not just a place to find a job.
That's right.
It's a place that people to go to be able to get is more LinkedIn than they are other platforms. So we're seeing this shift and change and where they want to go. But yeah, I mean, and this is the fun of being able to go live and all those other fun stuff. But I mean,
that's right.
LinkedIn audio is, I think it's a new era where they're actually going on LinkedIn and people are going to be spending more time on there to be able to connect with a higher level of audience. I mean, like people like you and I love the platform. Mm-hmm. Others just aren't seeing it as what it can be. It's not, people go, oh, it's a B2B play. You know, that's LinkedIn, business to business. Well, honestly, Bobby, there is no B2B or B2C, right? Business to business or business consumer. Those are just acronyms that were, you know, and concepts that were put together by guys like me 40, 50 years ago to diversify ad spend. Truly, everything is H2H, human to human, because every company is run by another human being. Most marketers have forgotten that.
Yeah.
So once you actually kind of get in here and be able to go through and realize there's a whole bunch of human beings, LinkedIn believes this as well. Like truly, this is where that human algorithm kind of comes into play. Because now you can actually truly go in. Like we're moving into a world of personal branding where it stands out more. All these different pieces play in to how and where LinkedIn is going.
Yeah, that's cool. I think it's exciting to see where, you know, what's going to happen with it.
Yeah.
One other thing, a couple other things I want to make sure we touched on too, because, you know, with LinkedIn and everything, to get engagement, you know, we talked about the appreciation. What about like headlines? content? Like, what do you see that works out there? Because we have a lot of people in the audience that they want to use it. They want to be more effective with it. What are some of your best?
All right. So we're going to drop two things that I think are going to help everyone out a little bit here.
Okay.
First and foremost, it all starts with your profile. You want to build a skyscraper for everyone to be able to see you, be able to hear you. Right. Well, it starts with a foundation. Your foundation, you have to be able to build that. It starts with your LinkedIn profile. Most people do not have that flushed out. It reads like a resume. Unless you're looking for a job, and even if you are looking for a job, it should not read like a resume. It should be a career journey. It should tell a story of where you've been to where you are now, right? These are those different pieces. Like if you look at mine and everyone looks up Joshua B. Lee on LinkedIn, like seriously, you will see like my first career on there is working at Chili's as a server. So many people you look on there and they're like, oh, well, Josh, CEO and founder of Standard Authority. Wow, he was born that way. No, I started out just like everybody else. Like we're looking for those commonalities, right? How many people go, right. Oh my God, Josh, you worked at Chili's? Me too, right? Oh, so there's those things that happen and go through. So you want to be able to tell this journey and be able to go through them. Now, the next piece of it is too, Bobby, you're talking about headlines. So many people go on there and they go, oh, I'm the founder of, or I'm director of marketing at, or I do sales for, well, that's great. That says it on your LinkedIn profile. You're wasting an amazing piece of real estate to be able to be customer facing forward. Now, I believe in the XYZ statement. It's what I help X to achieve Y so they can have Z. So X, that's your ideal client, right? You're self-identifying for them. This is the person that you help to be able to go through.
Yeah.
Y, right? This is the service you provide. This is the biggest thing that most people miss out on, Bobby, is this is what they sell all the time. They try and sell the service. If you've been in sales or marketing long enough, you realize that that is not the reason why people buy. It's the outcome of what you do, Z, right? So they can have that emotional tie. We are emotional beings. We make emotional decisions. Remember what I said earlier, people will make a decision on me and of everyone listening based on some degree of love or hate, right? If you are indifferent online, which most people try to be because they don't want to rub feathers or they don't want to be polarizing, you will waste their time and they will waste your own. That's the one resource we do not get back. So when you're on there, your profile should be, I help X, the person you help, to do Y, the service you provide, Z for the outcome, right? This is why people, if you have that on your headline, it draws people in. It allows them to be able to understand what you can do and why they want to work with you.
Yeah. Do you find that people are hesitant to narrow it down that way?
Of course.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, you're going to be better off being able to do that. Now, this is to get your foot in the door. Like when I was running multiple companies, Bobby, I was everything to everyone, but then I was nothing to no one, right? Because again, they were like, oh, that's John. He can help you monetize some things online. They didn't know exactly what I did. They just know, oh, go to Josh. He can be able to help you, whatever. And if he can't, he probably knows someone that can. That's it. Like that was so difficult to be in that state all the time. You have to, I hate to say it, put yourself in a box that people can understand. And once they open the box and you're in their world, then you can expand farther. You've got to be able to go in and you've got to be able to get that audience and be able to really talk to that right person. Because if you're talking to everyone, no one knows who you're talking to.
Because you're really talking to no one.
Right.
I saw someone scared to make a choice. Yeah. I saw someone on LinkedIn recently. I have no idea how I came across. Maybe we both liked something similar. And his thing was, he was a life coach for Chick-fil-A owners. And I thought, wow, if I were a Chick-fil-A owner, that's the guy I'm going to.
He stuck his flag in the sand, right? And said, hey, this is who I am.
And you know what? Even if you were a franchise owner for McDonald's or, you know, Chili's or whatever it is, you're still thinking, well, he understands that world.
Exactly. And that's the whole piece of that's what you want to be able to do. And I promise you, if you do that, I mean, think about this. Even if you had half a percent of the population in this world pay you $1, you're going to still be a millionaire.
Yeah.
Think about that. Even the manager at McDonald's, right? Or manager at Chick-fil-A. If you said, hey, for $1, I'm going to teach you how to become a manager at Chick-fil-A. I guarantee you, if you got half a percent of the population, you'd be a very wealthy man to pay him $1.
That's right.
Because there are that many people in this world that would love to be the manager of Chick-fil-A. They aspire to that. And there's so many different other things that we have to think about. So these are those things that I want everyone to understand. And like, there's probably a lot of Chick-fil-A's.
Probably so.
I mean, I look at the line. I don't think there's enough. Every time my kids want to go there, I'm like, guys, that line's about 50 people deep. I don't know if dad cares that much.
They better have some good chicken if I'm sitting in that line for that long. They're always busy. They're always busy.
Except for on Sunday.
Yeah. But I admire that they take the Sundays off. I like that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I mean, these are those pieces that I want people to pay attention to. I mean, it's okay. Be you, because that's the best you can be. Yeah. Right. And I mean, this is the biggest thing that people forget about. They've lost that you and human. Mm. Right. Because I mean, that's truly where that connection, like we live in this world. All right, if I went in and I talked about, let's say, unless you're a car person, you won't know this, right? Because it's like, if I said, okay, tell me what name comes to mind for when I say Mercedes, I don't know, Porsche and Tesla, what's the first name that comes to mind?
Is it like, what kind of name?
Like Elon Musk, right?
Oh, okay. There you go. Okay.
So, I mean, like, that's what I'm trying to look at, right? Like, even though Mercedes and Porsche have been around for a lot longer.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
No one knows who's the tippy top person unless they're a car person. But when you say Tesla, people go, oh, Elon Musk, it's that personal brand.
Yeah.
Right. Because he's put a stake in the sand and this is who I am. This is what I do. We're in a world now where personal brands, it's shifting from where employees used to advocate for their companies. Now companies are advocating for their employees because people want to connect with other people.
Yeah.
So this is where we're having this shift. So you have to be able to actually say, and people want to be able to work with the person, not just the brand, because of who they are and what they relate to. You've got to be able to get yourself from the door, knocking on the door, going, hey, I'm Joshua B. Lee. I want to say this pen to, you know, Bobby, you and I are sitting on the couch. I'm like, Bobby, I got this cool new pen. I don't have to say much more than that. You'll take it from me. Like, Josh, tell me more about it.
Yeah.
Because there's some commonality that has connected us on that human level that's put me on your couch. And that's what people have to understand on. This is the same thing with titles. What's going to get that commonality that's going to go, oh, that's like me or that's me. And then that's going to move them from the door to the couch. And then you're not having to sell anyone anymore. Then you can educate them. Then you can inspire them. Then they can choose to work with you. I guarantee you that's a much more powerful sale with a longer ROI, return on investment. You will if you have to sell someone. Because if you sell them, you have to keep on selling them every single month that you have to rebuild them. And that's exhausting, not only for them, but for yourself as well.
Yeah. Yeah. The connection piece, I think, is just massive. And you said something in there too, that around just being you, like you've got to be authentic because it's not something you can fake. Well, you can try, but I don't think it's pretty successful. Yeah. And but you see through it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know,
it's exhausting at the same time though, Robbie, isn't it? I mean, like,
oh my gosh,
isn't it easier if you're just 100% you 100% of the time on and offline?
Yeah.
And we've all met those people where like, oh my God, I love that person. You meet them in person. You're like, wow, that was different.
That was disappointing.
That was disappointing.
Yeah.
I mean, probably for them too, because it's exhausting. They have to put this facade on all the time because that's what we were taught. I mean, we live in this world of TikToks and Instagram and influencers. And like, I don't want to be an influencer. An influencer, someone's always trying to be fake or sell something or go through. That's just what we see. I want to be a thought leader with influence.
Yeah.
I think that's much more powerful.
It's a great reframing on it. Really. Oh my gosh. When you said that thing about the putting on a show, I can't remember the word you just used. This was years ago. I was getting ready to work with a company. And as part of the program, we do customization. I go in and I sit with the salespeople and I observe how they do. And I was sitting talking to this one guy and I thought, and he did phone sales outside, you know, and I thought this guy's going to be amazing. He was charismatic. He was warm, just a natural, like just, you really connected with him. He picked up the phone and dialed and it was like, what just happened here? It was so sleazy and cheesy and fake. And the conversation lasted 15 seconds. He hung with the phone. And I'm like, dude, what was that?
Yeah.
And he's like, that's my sales persona. I'm like, don't ever do it again. Like the real you is so powerful. Why would you do this? But he,
this is the things that everyone was taught for so long.
That's right. And he even told me, my manager, you know, like, this is what I've been taught. Forget it.
Yeah.
Forget it.
I think people are finally starting to see that, Bobby. I mean, like, you know, with the corona and everything that was happening like that, and everyone was like working remote, you know, I was blessed as well to be able to kind of get to go in and like a lot of these different big companies, Gartner, Oracle, some of these companies were able to bring me in and like teach their teams on how to be able to actually have real conversations.
Wow.
Because they were so worried, like all of a sudden you're taking all these people that are used to events and meeting in person and going through and then you're putting on phones. And if you can't see someone, so you can't look for tells. A lot of salespeople look for those tells that if you're watching body language, right? And how people are actually moving and talking to you to be able to adjust the conversation. Well, how do you teach them on a phone, on a Zoom call? How do you actually go through this? And so those are some of the things that we were going in and saying, look, this is how you do it on LinkedIn. Go through, give someone, appreciate them. You know, my mom taught me the different ways to be able to do it. Start with appreciation. And when you meet someone, give them a compliment. Don't pitch them, right? Mm-hmm. On LinkedIn, a compliment is giving an endorsement, right? Being able to go through and endorse someone. It's just like saying, oh, nice car, nice hat, you know, oh, love those shoes, right? It's and people go, oh, well, how can you endorse someone if you've never met them? It's just a compliment. It doesn't hold a lot more weight than that. You can endorse them. LinkedIn kind of goes in and says, hey, Bobby, Josh endorsed you. Do you want to say thank you? They prompt you.
Well, yeah.
So we've appreciated them and connected with them. We gave them an endorsement. Again, we're keeping them on that dopamine flow, right? Dopamine yep. hits kind of going through. They reach out and say, hey, Bobby, thank you so much. Or thanks, Josh, for endorsing me. I can go back in and go, Bobby, happy to do it. Hey, quick question for you while I have you. You know, I always love to be able to add value. And now I can ask a qualifying question about them so I can meet them where they're at. And then I can provide value based on their answer. And being able to take someone through this whole process, we're treating them like another human being. We're making it about them. And we keep on giving these dopamine hits that allow them to be able to stay in a state that keeps them connected to the conversation.
Yeah. Wow. And so this is part of what you do at Standout then, Standout Authority.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. We do this all the time. We go through, I mean, we work with, you know, we have a lot of done for you service where we come in and be able to, you know, really help clients. We work with a lot of executives. We work with a lot of sales teams. We have a lot of coaching programs too, because I mean, overall, I mean, and I mean, Bobby, I mean, anyone knows, I mean, you've seen some of my content on LinkedIn. I mean, I share freely because I mean, I don't need everyone to hire me. The right people, if they don't have the time to be able to learn, you know, they'll come and they'll hire us, right? You know, to be able to get there because they want to be able to, they understand to stay in their zone of genius. Right. And let me do what I can do best for you. And you do what you do best. And we all win. But if you can't, like you want to be able to just learn, I give freely. I share because I truly believe in this world. We all rise up. And we all rise up together. And I wish I had had some of the information that I've learned and try and share on a regular basis, on a daily basis on LinkedIn. I wish I'd been able to see some of this stuff before when I started my first company.
Yeah. And it's there's a lot of information and it can be confusing and it's what's right for me, what's right, you know? So I think it's great that you're helping people in that way.
Yeah. And I mean, we try and identify as best as possible. After spending the last year and a half, you know, on Clubhouse and hearing people just give random pieces of advice that without any context, I was like, oh, you're going to hurt so many people. Please don't tell someone that because you don't know where they're at. And I mean, that's the same situation where we're having these many conversations, these many coffee conversations on LinkedIn, the direct messages. That's why you always ask someone, hey, ask them a qualifying, ask them about themselves first before you provide value, right? Because I mean, these are the pieces that I've seen so many times, so many mistakes. Be like, oh, this is what you should do to everybody. Everyone should do that exact same thing. Everyone's different. We're all human beings and we all have a different life. We all have different background.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think people try to use the same approach. Well, it worked once, so
yeah.
Well, that's mean. So what is the best way if someone's listening and want to learn more about how you can help, what's the best way for them to learn more and get in touch with you?
All right, Bobby, this is the most fun part, the entire experience, because this is what I really love, right? I want everyone to find me on LinkedIn, Joshua B. Lee, and I want you to send me a personal message. I don't send me just the blank connection request because again, I'm not trying to collect different, more connections. I want to be able to build relationships. And the only way I can do that more so with Bobby is if you send me a personal relation, personal connection and send me that note and say, hey, I heard you on Bobby's show and I love her because of X, Y, or Z, right? Because then I can go to Bobby and go, hey, Bobby, look at all these cool things that people said about you.
Very nice.
So that's what I want people to do. Come on, find me on LinkedIn, send me a message, tell me why you listen to Bobby, why you're going through there, and then let's build a relationship.
Very nice. And I'll put that in the show notes, obviously. Anything else that you want to tell people about, you know, in terms of what's going on with you?
Oh, Bobby, these days, I mean, life is good. I can't complain. Continue to be able to move forward. So I appreciate your time. I mean, look, I hope everyone learns something, even something a little bit from today and is able to take it and be able to take it forward.
Nice. I appreciate your time too and sharing what you did here. So, you know, I've enjoyed the conversation.
Of course.
I hope that you enjoyed that conversation. As always, here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, it stood out to me that once Joshua showed his vulnerability and his struggle to his buddies, he felt a sense of relief, as though a weight had been lifted off of him. I think that probably many of us can relate, as we've probably all carried a similar weight. You know, pretending to be one thing, or that everything is fine, when maybe things really aren't fine, and there's value and being real and being authentic with that. Insight number two, I really loved how Joshua framed it when he said that if the first thing we do in the morning is to look at our phone and our email and our text messages and social media, what we are really saying is that the outside world is more important than where we are right now. And then finally, insight number 3. Now, he didn't say it this way, but what I took from it is that when we are showing up on LinkedIn or anywhere in our life for that matter, to just be you. That's been one of my favorite expressions for a long, long time. In fact, when I used to do leadership retreats for high school students, I don't know, a decade or more ago, one of the things that I'd always say was to be you and be great. We can't really be great at being something that we're not. Thanks so much for tuning in and for listening. I appreciate that. And I also appreciate how many of you have shared episodes with a friend, colleague, or family member. It's great validation that the podcast is making a difference. I started the podcast nearly 2 years ago now as a way to contribute value and good in the world. So thank you for helping me share that. Until next time, I hope you have a great week and make sure that you thrive no matter what.